Hello, this is Alan Watt here, standing in for Jackie Patru, who will be back on Monday and Tuesday, maybe Wednesday too, by herself, doing a talk on Lusitania, World War One. And I've been just going through various things that flit through my head, of course, and that's why I prefer not to be a linear thinker. To be a linear thinker is to show that your conditioning through schooling has worked. Because linear thinking is always to do with what they call logic and set formats, where you look at a subject, you find out why the subject is the subject, what caused it to be so, what its purpose is, where does it go from here, etc., etc. It's a mathematical sequence, and so when you're given a problem, you think linearly, and you come to the conclusion really that's programmed for you to come to, which is always the wrong one. It keeps us in the dark. If you're non-linear, you can jump back and forth between various topics, and time and history, because it all must be shown together how everything that's happening today is simply a lead up, or was led up to, by preparations done thousands of years ago. I put some of this in my three books for sale, and I should mention them now. I do some of the ancient history, the pre-Masonic but still the builders, of course, history of ancient Egypt, etc. I show you much of the Masonic symbolism, although that's been co-opted by one of the main superstars of shortwave, who's adopted this kind of stuff because they must get themselves put as the superstars, so you'll be led up the garden path. And but it doesn't matter anyway, because they never give you the truly esoteric meanings anyway. So if you want one or any of these books, they're all free. They're $25 US each, payable in international money order, and you address them to me at Alan Watt, which is W-A-T-T. The address, the post address, is Site 41, S-I-T-E 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. So that's Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, Site 41, S-I-T-E 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada, P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. And my phone number is 705-695-0416. So these books, as I say, go up through that. The third book goes into that as well. I show you the big coincidences in history, such as the Statue of Rhodes, which was the capital of the big banking boys thousands of years ago, B.C., and the Statue of Rhodes, of course, had the sun god with his spikes coming out of his head. He had his right hand out. Some ancient historians say he held the torch there. There was definitely a beacon there. And of course, people today will say, gee, that's a similarity to the statue in New York, quite near Rhodes, in fact, isn't it? But it must be coincidence, mustn't it? For you're seeing the same symbols of unbroken power from thousands of years ago up until today, and you can't put it all together. That's quite something, because these symbols have been used all down through history, through every religion on the planet, every authorized religion, and the esoteric is always hidden from the public, or the profane, as they call it. It's also hidden from the low-degree Freemasons, because you must have willing fools, as Mr. Pike said himself, who don't know that they're fools. They think they're there for charity and do self-help work and all that kind of stuff. That's how the world really runs. Everybody's in a little pigeonhole or a tunnel, and they don't know what's... There's another tunnel next to them, and there's a whole bunch of tunnels next to them. They only live in their own little tunnel from the day they're born to the day they die. It's very interesting. If we even go back to the times of Sumer, you'll see the statues of the priests of Sumer, and it's very interesting that they wore the sheepskin skin around their loins. And of course, it's the same today. The proper Masonic the pinafore, the apron, is also made of sheepskin. At least the good ones are. And of course, you've got to ask yourself, is there a wolf behind the sheep here? Or is that just Viagra? Because these guys love to boast, and they certainly do. So we have the same symbology down through the ages of the shepherd people, you see, the sheepskin, those who wear the sheepskin. And they make the sheep around them believe they're one of us, and we don't realize that the shepherd's very different from us, because the shepherd actually owns us, and we feed him, and we clothe him. If the sheep knew that, they'd run a mile if they saw the shepherd. But of course, the sheep don't know that. They see business suits and well-dressed people who are obviously expert at running things, and so we like them just like the sheep. No different than ancient times. We give it all to the good shepherds who are promoted to us, so that we might follow them. The only duty we have as a citizen in any country, and you've got to realize a citizen, the definition is someone born into a system with pre-existing duties. So, in other words, if you have pre-existing duties, how can you be free? You see? It takes a little bit of thinking there, but we can overcome that barrier. And so, we have pre-existing duties, and of course part of that is always to pay off debt. Even though Benjamin Franklin, a member of Illuminati, who gives you a lot of the clues, they speak openly, because I guess they have to really give you very easy clues. And he said, Jefferson said that a generation born into paying off the debt incurred from a previous generation are de facto slaves. Today we call it democracy and freedom. So it's quite amazing how we can be told the truth by some of the illumined ones down through history, and we think, well, so what? You know, everything's fine. I'm okay, Jack. How are you? We ignore the truth. So yeah, from the sheepskins of the ancient Sumerian priests, you look at the pharaohs, of course, of Egypt, and they wore a cloth round them. You also see it was hung in the middle in a pyramid-type shape, from the below the belly button down to above the knees, like a kilt. And of course, he wore that type because he's a perfect pyramid. He is at the top of the pyramid, actually. The ones below would have to have ones with a flat square because they don't have a capstone. So nothing really has changed to today. What we call Freemasonic is to shape and build culture and society and man himself. We look at the ancient builders of the medieval times, and when they were building up a cathedral, they were also dismantling the old one. So they dismantle the past as they're putting up the new structure. This goes on and on through all of the symbology. Eventually they will reshape man, and it's not far off. They've got the ability to do it. It's not because they're waiting to improve the abilities to do it that they're hanging on. They're getting us already mentally and psychologically to accept the big changes which are coming on in a physical realm, because they've always said their job was to perfect that which was left imperfect. The guide to Solomon's temple is that the individual enlightened one is the temple. You see, you are a temple, but it's imperfect for the masses, and therefore they're going to perfect it. So the next type of working type people they will create will be purposely made for their task, just like Brave New World. Aldous Huxley did not get his ideas from again a crystal ball. Aldous Huxley was the grandson of Professor Thomas Huxley, who was Charles Darwin's best buddy, and he became the champion of Darwinism after Darwin died. Aldous Huxley got his information from inner circles of the elite in Britain, from the universities, and simply wrote them into his books. He said on his speeches that he knew this would be put into operation, the Brave New World scenario, where they will purposely grow people for specific tasks. And here's another big coincidence, because we jump back to Plato's Republic. When Plato, in his discourse, talks about the creation of a perfect world state, where the guardian class won't have to utilize so much time and energy to watch all the workers and slave populations, because they will make they will purposely make the slave populations for their own particular functions. That was called the Republic, and that was his form of a utopia. Utopia to them is when they don't have to give you entertainment, distractions, frivolous wars, that type of things, dramas, plays, music to entertain us. They won't have to. We'll be very, very efficient, because they'll program people after creating them to do their work 24 hours a day. They won't need entertainment. So Plato himself did not dream up that idea, since Plato was a pupil of Socrates. Socrates, of course, was forced to drink the hemlock after being convicted, and his conviction was that he'd been recruiting the elite youth and training them through a secret society to infiltrate the power structure and cause revolution. Socrates and Plato both studied this in Egypt. And so you look back at Egypt and you find that all of these elite people who went to study there were initiated into the high mystery religions, and then they were sent back to the original countries to set up these little cult groups and train the youth through fascinating stories, which is the same today, of the supposed esoteric, but they don't tell them esoteric, and fomenting revolution. All must become one. Out of many, one, reverse it, one out of many. You might also say monopoly, mono, one, poly, many. And that's what the United States has been famous for, is the creation of monopolies, e pluribus unum. So anyway, this has always been their agenda. You see it all down through history if we care to look. It is not a coincidence, and we're dealing with something here which obviously, very obviously, does not think in completing any one thing in a lifetime, a human span. We're dealing with something which can make incredible plans thousands of years into the future, right down to the finish date too. And it also knew the wisdom of the past, meaning the studying of human nature for thousands of years in ancient times, to plan out a destination to bring mankind, culminating in a world order, a new world order, which of course, in a coincidence, Papa Bush mentioned in September the 11th in 1990. All these coincidences are just tripping us up everywhere. But yeah, we're dealing with something which is beyond simply the human. It does teach humans as well, of course, that the little workers they have, in a religious format, because there's a religion behind this, a definite religion. That's what motivates natural man, is dedication to a religion, especially when it gives members special privileges in this world. But whatever is behind it, as we know, it doesn't worry about dying in a generation or so. That's fairly obvious. It's also obvious that humans are not apt to plan something a generation ahead and carry it out. Other things crop up. Finances have to be pushed elsewhere. Unexpected things happen. And people just get plain tired. But there's something here driving this generation between one to the next and the next. If we look at the cathedrals of England and Europe, and we realize that driving this generation between one to the next and the next. If we look at the cathedrals of England and Europe, and we realize that these cathedrals took 5 to 7 generations of stonemasons to build, through famines, through plagues, through crusades, where the money was getting taken to go off abroad, massive money from the public, and yet this agenda to build the cathedrals never ceased. And architects today, trained architects who go over to study these cathedrals in Europe, are flabbergasted at the sciences which were used to bring these inner domed vaults, etc., together. I don't know how many of them, I'm sure the Masonic ones did, but I don't know how many of them noticed that really these arches within these cathedrals and their big beams and all the rest of it are simply a sculptured form of nature. Because it's showing you a grove. These cathedrals inside simulate the trees people have, it seems. And the ability to put all of this work together, incredible creations, is almost beyond the modern architect and builders, societies, and so on. They couldn't do it so well. So we're living with all of these amazing coincidences, and we're taught at school, we're on the cutting edge of science and civilization, and who knows what we'll discover next is going to push us in a great leap forward, but in reality the sciences that are hidden from the public have been available for at least 500 years and probably longer. We look at the explosion of microcircuitry that first appeared in wristwatches back in the 1970s, which flourished overnight. The markets in all countries were dumped with these cheap watches, which were battery operated and kept perfect time, digital readouts and all the rest of it, and played about 3 or 4 different tunes, etc., and put the Swiss watchmaking businesses out of business overnight. And I saw many of my friends buying them, and yet what amazed me was none of them were stunned as to where this technology had suddenly come from. They take it for granted. You see, most people take everything that happens for granted. They don't question it. most people alive today lived through the big transition of all the major industry in the world over the last 15 years to China. And yet, very few were conscious of it. They dreamed through it, and now they simply think it's normal that everything's made in China. So people don't really live through their life. Living means being a sentient being. Sentience is awareness. And people who don't ask questions are obviously not aware. And Plato, jumping back then in non-linear thinking, of course, Plato himself said, we create culture. He said, we can give opposite, he's talking about the elite, of course, of ancient times. He says, all culture comes from the top. Culture that came out from the bottom could upset, have a ripple effect and destroy everything. The unpredictable, you see. So all cultural changes are from the top down. They're permissible and planned by the top and implemented. And of course the people who see the culture changes through generally music, according to Plato. Today it's much music. Then it was just roving musicians. They had roving troops of drama players. And of course he said people mimic what they see on stage, so the general public simply mimic what they see, the fashions and so on. And Plato said we can literally change the culture and all of its values in a completely opposite direction within one generation. In that generation there'll hardly be one person who actually was conscious through the transition. And that is true today. It's no different today. The public go through the transitions without noticing them. Even if the skirt goes from an ankle to halfway up the thigh, in one generation it's somehow normal. And it's normal because it's approved from the top, because anything that was not approved from the top, believe you me, would be nipped in the bud before the public even heard about it. And if you wonder why pop stars who helped bring in the drugs, sex, rock and roll, which eventually destroyed what was left of the family, were getting knighted by the Queen. You know, the Beatles, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, LSD, who turned on millions of people into drugs, got knighted for helping what? What did they help in the system? And what we know is, of course, that they had to destroy the remnants of the family unit by creating promiscuity, which they'd planned in the 1800s. H.G. Wells was promoting free love, they called it, in 1885. Free love. But they didn't have the contraceptives, and the fallout was disastrous. So they went back to the drawing board and had all the scientists work on the contraceptive pill. So they put that out forward with the National Health Service, which gave you free abortion and penicillin for the diseases, and reapplied it using music, the traditional Plato thing, you see, fashion, the miniskirt, and formulas. These are simple formulas. And they work very well. The public didn't notice the change. They never thought, why did it come this way? Where does fashion come from? Who authorizes fashion? And fashion, remember, means to shape. So it's Masonic, you see, as everything else in this world is. Uniform, as I say, uniform. People in uniform are one form. And that's why armies have been created for thousands of years. And once again, you've got many acting as one. They're drawn from the ranks of the people at the bottom, drilled, just like miners, in a sense, because that's where drilling comes from. Square bashing, it's Masonic, so they walk the square, they drill on the square. And they have one form when they're ready, and they'll do whatever they're told, even if it means going and bashing their parents on the skulls with the butt of their guns, they'll do it, because all of this has been done before, done through history. And here is this music coming, so I guess the time is rolling to a head. Well, I'll end with that rant, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you. It's non-linear thinking, which I enjoy, of course. And Jackie will be back on Monday to talk to you.